Hi, this is Dan Lynch. Join myself and Randy Harper for Floss This Week as we're joined by Stephen Hazel of Source Labs, an automated testing tool for testing your mobile apps and your web apps. That's coming up next on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 251, recorded Wednesday, the 8th of May, 2013. Source Labs. Hello and welcome to another Floss Weekly. You've probably realized already by now, by the sound of my voice, that I am not Randall Schwartz, your regular host. My name is Dan Lynch and I'm filling in this week. Randall's away off in sunny climes somewhere else right now. But you're in capable hands, don't worry about that. I'm joined by a very lovely co-host in the shape of Randy Harper, FreeBSD girl.
I am the somewhat capable co-host. Hello. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. So what have you been up to lately? Are you keeping busy?
Mostly just working on coding, remembering how, because it's been a long time. So I'm really interested in hearing about the testing frameworks and all the stuff we're about to get into, because it seems pretty relevant to what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's led us in nicely, actually. Yeah, I was just going to say, when you're coding, very important to make sure you test what you do. And we're going to talk about that a lot today. We're probably going to preach to you quite a lot about testing, but it is massively important. Our guest today is Stephen Hazel from Source Labs. And Source Labs offer cloud-based solutions, so web services you can use for automating website testing, so your web apps. You can test them using Selenium and some of the other tools they've got in the background there. You can test your websites on a variety of different browsers and platforms and all that kind of stuff, which is massively important to all web developers. But not only websites, you can also use their Appium tool, which they're working on right now, to test your iOS and Android apps on virtual machines and test them out and make sure they work properly, which is really important as well. So have you looked at any of this before, Randy? Have you had a chance to check it out?
I looked at it last night and this morning. I remember Selenium. I was actually co-hosting the show for that a while ago. So I've been racking my brain trying to remember all that was covered back there, because I know that it's related to Selenium and they work together, the guy that I interviewed. So I haven't worked with it, but I have a little bit of a background in it.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's something we can find out more about from Stephen, hopefully, how Selenium relates and all that kind of stuff. All right, and so without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Okay, so we're joined on the show right now by Stephen Hazel, who is the VP of Product for Source Labs. Stephen, how's it going?
It's going good.
Glad and to be where here. Are you speaking? Sorry, I'm cutting over you there. Where are you speaking to us from?
This is my living room in San Francisco.
Oh, okay, because I noticed on your bio that it says you like to work in coffee shops.
I do, yes. So it's not quite time to head to the cafe today.
Right, okay. Yeah, well, it's nice quiet background for us. I was worried it might be a bit noisy in a coffee shop. Okay, that's cool. So can you tell us a little bit about your role at Source Labs and what Source Labs do?
Sure. So I'm a co-founder of Source Labs. We started the company in late 2008. I was initially chief architect. I did a lot of coding. I've since moved to VP product. And then I guess the background of Source Labs is we're an automated testing cloud company. We started off with browser-based testing, so, you know, testing websites using Selenium. My co-founder, Jason Huggins, is the original creator of Selenium. Mm-hmm. And we've since made the move into mobile testing. We currently do mobile web testing, and we have an invite-only native app testing cloud product.
Okay, so as you say, it's a cloud product. So this is a web service that I would use on your servers then.
Exactly. We have a bunch of browsers running in virtual machines. The way that Selenium normally works, you would remote control a browser on your local machine. And so to use our service, instead of pointing your Selenium test scripts at your local machine, you point them at sauslabs.com, and you can control, IE10 running on Windows 8 or Safari running on Mac OS 10, basically any browser out there. As well as now iOS and Android simulators and emulators.
Wow, that sounds really, really useful. So one of the big problems I know a lot of web developers have is testing their applications, testing their web apps on so many different platforms, combinations of OS and browser, and now you've got mobile devices as well. So this is the kind of problem you're aiming to solve for people, letting them test everything at once, if you like.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a big issue for people, and I think we make it a lot easier.
Hmm. Okay, then. So how does the service work then? I mean, is it a subscription service? Do I pay to do so many tests, or do I pay per month or something like that?
Yeah, it's pay per use. So it's we essentially charge by the machine minute. So if you're using one browser for 5 minutes, that's 5 minutes worth of time. If you're using 50 browsers at the same time for 5 minutes, then that's 5 times 50. I guess 250 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And you can automate your tests as well. You can have all your stuff automated. Is that right?
Yeah. So we do both manual testing, where you can just grab control of the browser in a VNC session in your browser. So, you know, you might be browsing in Safari on OS 10, and you get a VNC session in your browser that's pointing at a Windows 8 machine running IE 10, and you can see how your site looks. You can also do automated testing with a Selenium script, where you tell the script, you know, go to this page, fill out this form, click submit. On the next page, you should see this text. And if you don't, you know, let me know. And your script will just kind of remote control the browser and drive through your app and ensure that everything works.
Excellent. Yeah, it sounds really, really handy. So how did this product come to be then? What was the kind of, you know, what was the kicking off point for it? What kind of made you guys want to build this product?
Sure. So, you know, Jason, being the original creator of Selenium, had seen a lot of big Selenium installations. Selenium works great if you just want to remote control a browser that's on your local machine, or if you have, you know, one or two extra configurations that you're sort of controlling on a remote machine. But as you start to scale up, as you start to get a lot of tests that you're running very frequently, like in a continuous integration setup, and as you start to get a lot of browser combinations that you want to try things out on, you know, so that you're covered on, you know, Firefox on OS 10 and Windows and Internet Explorer 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you start to get this massive server farm just to run browsers for your Selenium setup.
Mm.
And that gets to be a maintenance hassle. And Jason had seen it a bunch of times. And he said, you know what, somebody should build a whole company around just solving this problem. Around the same time, my other co-founder, John, our CEO, was looking at Agile and open source and was saying, you know, the ecosystem is kind of changing here. There needs to be a company somewhere in here to change the way testing works. And they met up, and not much later, they found me actually on Google and reached out. And that's how we got started.
Cool. So how many people are actually involved in the company then? It's quite a tight-knit team by the sound of it.
There's a little more than 20 of us now, 21 or 22.
Uh-huh. And are you all based?
Yeah, it's a very tight-knit team.
Right.
Based in San Francisco. We have a couple of people. We have someone in Poland. We have someone in Australia. But the majority of us are in San Francisco.
Cool. Okay, then. So let's go a little bit over some of what Source Labs has to offer. So, I'm interested to know how this fits into kind of the open source community then, because obviously everybody needs to test their software. Is the software itself, the server and so on, is that open source? How does that work?
So the core technology, Selenium, is open source.
Mm-hmm.
We also have our mobile native automation tool, Appium, is open source. We're big open source advocates, big open source fans, and big open source contributors. So we have a large list of products that our company is, you know, contributing to in one way or another. We're heavy contributors to Appium, the mobile automation tool, and we are also contributors to a Python evented IO framework called Monocle, a JavaScript testing tool called WD.js, which is like a JavaScript client for Selenium, and a handful of other projects.
Mm.
So we really care deeply about open source. And, you know, we're trying to build a business where, you know, the tool chain that the end user is using is an open source tool chain. You know, they're using Selenium, Appium, things that they can install in their own ecosystem, you know, with their own tools, deeply integrated with everything else they're using. They can make changes if they need to. You know, we just provide a service to make that more scalable. But it's exactly the same software that you could install and use in your own infrastructure, if that's the way you want to go.
That's really cool, because I was going to ask you that. Could I get this stuff and install it on a server of my own if I wanted to? And, you know, do maybe in-house testing. I don't know. Some companies may be sensitive about, you know, giving out information. I don't know why. They might want in-house testing. So I could actually get these components and set them up myself if I wanted to, for whatever reason.
Right, absolutely. It's a popular choice. A lot of companies do it. And in fact, I feel like, you know, from a business perspective, that's actually great for us, because companies that download and install, you know, Selenium, Appium, and start learning to use that in their own infrastructure, you know, I feel like eventually when they kind of grow up and they get a lot of become heavy users, they're going to find that, you know, that's not their core competency. That's not what makes them money. And that they want to just hand that off to someone who, you know, their whole job is just to run a really reliable testing cloud. So I feel like it's, you know, it's a great business strategy for us.
That's very, very cool. So if I just going a little bit down that road, if I did want to, say, install it myself, do you have packages and stuff that I could grab for maybe Linux distributions and other major platforms?
Yeah, so Selenium, you know, is a well-established project. You go to seleniumhq.org, and there's jars you can download. It's Java-based, so you can run a Selenium server. There's a Selenium grid that can organize a bunch of servers into a grid that will run your tests on a bunch of different platforms. And then for Appium, if you go to appium.io, there's a .app that you can download. You can also go to GitHub and get the source, and it's based on Node and JavaScript, so you can compile the few pieces of it that need to be compiled and run it, check out the source code.
Excellent. And speaking of Appium, which you very helpfully brought up there, I noticed that you claim it's got four rules. So what are the four rules, and why do they matter?
Yeah, so when we were initially looking at getting into mobile automation, we were looking around at what open source frameworks were out there, since we would obviously want to do it in an open source way. And we evaluated a bunch of different frameworks. And as we were doing that evaluation, especially my co-founder, Jason Huggins, came to start seeing that, you know, there were like qualities that many of these frameworks had some of, but few had all of. And we were kind of looking for something that would fulfill sort of some rules that we started to develop about what we were looking for in a mobile automation tool. And so when we found the predecessor of Appium, the original source code, which was created by some excellent guys at Zoosk, we kind of felt like, okay, this is kind of fitting in where we believe a mobile automation tool needs to fit in. And in this process, we came up with these rules. So the rules are, number one, you should be testing the same application binary that you're going to ship to the App Store. If you have to compile something into your framework or into your app in order to test it, there's all kinds of room for problems. So it's very easy for, you know, your test build to diverge in some way from your release build, and so you end up testing something that's a little bit different from what you end up shipping to the App Store. There's also ways that just having a mobile automation tool integrated can affect performance. So we felt like it's really important that you have that fidelity, that what you're testing is exactly what you're going to ship to the App Store. So rule number one is you can't change the app in the process of testing it. Rule number two is we noticed a lot of frameworks kind of, they picked a language for testing. And I think developers want to write tests either in the language they're developing their app in, or in a language that they feel like has really great testing tools. And so our second rule was, you got to be able to test with any language, any framework that you want. The automation tool should be about automation and not about scripting.
So stepping back a little bit, I'll admit, I actually just had to Google. So can we explain to everybody like what Appium is? Because I've never heard of it before.
Sure, yeah. Appium is like Selenium for apps. In fact, Selenium does a little bit of app automation these days as well. But Appium is an automation tool for driving native apps for the purpose of testing. So an Appium script will say, okay, well, launch my app. And, you know, on the first page, there's a login form. So fill out the login form with these credentials. Click this button. So the commands in the script are things like, you know, find the login form, type in, you know, my username is Steve. My password is whatever, hit submit. Now we're waiting for okay, you're logged in to appear on the screen. So if that doesn't appear on the screen, then that's a test failure. So just, you know, commands that fill out fields, click buttons, move sliders, swipe and pinch, and do mobile gestures. And you can write tests like this for iOS and Android. A single test, if you construct it right, can automate an app in iOS and Android if your app is very similar on both iOS and Android. And you can write your tests in any language, any framework. So if you like testing with RSpec in Ruby, there's a Selenium client for Ruby. You point your Selenium client at Appium. Appium speaks the Selenium protocol, which is a really great decision on the part of Appium, we think, because it means that all of these tools that exist in the world that understand Selenium or integrate with Selenium can be used with Appium out of the box. So there's Selenium clients for, you know, RSpec and Ruby. So if you wanted to do your testing in RSpec or Cucumber, no problem. It's also possible, you know, if you're doing iOS or Android app development, you're probably an Objective-C or a Java developer. There's also client libraries for Objective-C and Java. So if you prefer to write your tests in the same language as you're writing your app, that's an option that's available to you. And yeah, it'll automate apps on simulators and emulators. It'll automate apps on real devices. And my co-founder, Jason, has been building robots for, you know, tapping on the screens of devices. It'll also control those robots. That's still in the works.
Wow, that sounds very kind of Tony Stark, Iron Man kind of thing.
Jason is a madman.
Right, okay, that's really cool. So I'm now slightly worried that, you know, if I did something wrong, the robot arm might go crazy and, you know, attack someone in the lab.
Only if he's very successful.
Yeah, I'm sure you have lots of safety measures to stop that kind of thing. As long as it doesn't become sentient, we're okay. So I think we may have only got two of the rules out of your four rules there. So do you want to tell us the other two and finish that bit off?
Sure, yeah. So yeah, the rules we covered, if I'm remembering the order in which I did them right, were you test the same app that you ship to the App Store and any language, any framework. So let me try and remember our rules. the third rule I actually already mentioned in my answer to the previous question, which was we think it's important to support a standard protocol. So we went with the JSON wire protocol that Selenium speaks. We think that's a great decision for an automation tool because there's automation tools out there, things that integrate with unit testing frameworks, things that integrate with CI systems, things that integrate with all kinds of tools. And so we feel like it's, you know, it's not a great plan to reinvent the wheel, pick a standard protocol. So that's our third rule. And our fourth rule was to have a thriving open source community. We think that, you know, it's really important you know, that an automation tool be open source so that it can get integrated with everything everyone's using, so that it can get fixed and improved and extended by the community to solve the problems that people have. And we're really not a fan of, I guess, corporate open source policies. We don't like code bombs. We don't like internal development that just gets dropped on people. We really like doing everything out in the open. So our involvement with Appium has been, you know, open on GitHub all along. Every commit goes to GitHub. We don't, you know, workshop things internal to Sauce Labs for weeks and then drop a code bomb on everybody. We like to do everything out in the open. And we think it's really important to keep a community engaged. Appium is not a Sauce Labs only project. There's, you know, there's contributors at Rackspace, at Zoosk, a handful of other companies. And I think there's also just folks who are, you know, independently interested in mobile app testing who are playing around with it and contributing fixes.
Mm. And that's a really great philosophy, the whole developing everything in the open, because we've seen a lot of open source companies and people who do a lot of open source stuff talking about skunkworks, which seems to be the cool term for it these days, which is basically developing things in private and then throwing it over the wall. And something that a lot of people complain about with the Android project is obviously Google will often just drop a load of code on people and then open source it later when they're not expecting it. Yeah.
It's tempting to do if you're, you know, you're used to working with folks in your office and, you know, you can just go over to their desk and talk to them. It's easy to fall into the same patterns you fall into when you're doing, you know, regular closed source development at your company. But I think it's really it's a bad habit that companies can easily fall into, and it's important to resist it, because doing the development out in the open makes it far easier for external contributors to get involved and know what's going on and help. You know, where if you're doing everything behind closed doors, that's really, really difficult for an external contributor.
Yeah, it's difficult for the community to feel involved as well, I think. Because they feel like the last person in the chain, and they're not really involved in the discussion. They're just kind of the ones that get the stuff thrown at them at the end. So it seems to be a big problem at the moment for a lot of companies. But I was curious that you Appium is using Node, isn't it? Node.js. So why did you decide to go with Node?
Yeah, so this was part and parcel of the decision that we wanted a thriving open source community. The two other choices, the initial code base for what ultimately became Appium was written in Python, which would have been a pretty easy choice for us because we're primarily a Python shop. And Selenium, which, you know, Appium strives to be compatible with Selenium, is written in Java. So Java would have been an easy choice because it would have integrated really well with Selenium. But when we were looking at it, we felt like there's a lot of excitement and involvement around JavaScript. And if there's a common language that everyone doing mobile development is going to know, it's going to be JavaScript. A lot of folks are doing hybrid apps with JavaScript controls. And so we felt like JavaScript was kind of a nice common denominator language. It's also a language that people are excited about right now. And you know, there's a lot of activity. So we wanted to go with something that we felt like, you know, it would be good for getting contributors. It would be good for getting excitement and involvement. Apple's automation framework for iOS is JavaScript based anyway. So a lot of folks who were doing testing on iOS were already doing that testing in JavaScript. So it was convenient in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, Node is very cool right now, and it's one of the hot new kind of things that everyone's getting excited about. I think because so many people spent years doing JavaScript for obviously front-end stuff, client-side kind of stuff in the browser, we've all kind of spent ages doing JavaScript, and it does seem quite handy to just have the same language on the back end. Is that a real advantage for you guys?
Yeah, you know, we're big fans of Node. I think Node is well designed and architected, and yeah, it's really handy. You know, we do a lot of JavaScript development on the front end of our website, and I think it's, you know, it's a language that basically you can't get away without knowing at least a little JavaScript these days, and so it's a language that, you know, it obviously has many faults but also many strengths, and it's known by so many people that I think it's a smart language to develop in.
Mm. So what kind of people are using Appium right now then? What kind of, what's the community like, and what are the customer base like?
Yeah, so out there in the, you know, just open source users of Appium, Rackspace is a user, Zoosk is a, you know, a primary instigator. I think we've got Everest, there's an app called Woven, I can't remember the name of the company that develops that, and a handful of others that I'm not... remembering off the top of my head, but really a lot of you know, involvement from companies with, you know, recognizable names, which is encouraging, and a lot of involvement you know, that's not just using it but also contributing.
Excellent. And do you have you mentioned that it's you know, obviously developing in the open is very important to you. So what kind of platforms do you use? And using GitHub and stuff like that to allow people to check out the code and work on it and so on?
Yeah, it's on GitHub, github.com/Appium/Appium. We do all the development pretty much out there on GitHub. We use Travis CI for continuous integration.
Excellent. So you accept patches from the community then?
Yeah, pull requests on GitHub. We have an IRC channel. You can hop in there, and if you're working on something, you know, let us know and we can give you pointers. It's Appium channel on Freenode.
Excellent. All right. And so it sounds like obviously community is a really big thing for you guys then. So you want to keep people involved. Do you have like a community manager or anyone? I know that's quite common now these days for companies to have someone in charge of the community. Or do you kind of split that up between everyone else and all the developers and everyone?
We don't have a community manager. In fact, we try to shepherd the Appium community as much as it seems like it needs it. But we want it to be an independent, like freestanding open source project. So We have developers who spend a lot of time working on Appium, but we don't have someone whose job it is to manage that community. We just kind of contribute time where it seems like it's needed.
Mm. Excellent. Okay, then. So, I was looking through some of the stuff on the website there, and it seems like it's really taken off at the moment, this testing thing. I know I'm going to ask you to give the pitch on why testing is important, which I know can seem a little bit like you're the teacher telling off the developers, because testing is one of these things. It's a bit like documentation, I tend to find. It's quite low down the list of priorities for a lot of developers, but it really shouldn't be. So can you tell us a little bit why testing is so important?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen on the web why testing is critical. And I think web developers have really adopted testing in a big way, both unit testing and functional testing with things like Selenium. Mm. In mobile, it's a little more, it's the Wild West, right? Mobile app development is so new. The tool chains are so new. I think a lot of mobile development teams haven't been doing testing traditionally just because there haven't been tools for it. A lot of the tools for doing this are brand new. And also because, you know, in the early days of developing your app, you're probably a small team. Small teams need testing a little bit less. And also mobile really started with consumer apps. And with consumer apps, you have sort of a low value per user. So if a few users have a bad experience and you learn from it and you fix the problem for everybody else, you're not doing that badly by your users. But if you are, especially we see apps now like, you know, Bank of America has an app. And there's plenty of enterprise apps out there where you have kind of a higher value per user, per transaction. And, you know, if you're a CRM tool and a sales guy out in the field can't use this thing to look up contact info that he needs access to, he's not going to be happy. And so there's a different value per user, right? If you're trying to use your Facebook and it's not working right now and it works again in 10 minutes or it works again when you update the app, it's not the end of the world, especially if Facebook really jumps on getting that kind of stuff fixed. But for enterprise apps, for banking, and really for anything where the impression that you're making on your end user is significant, especially just if you don't have the kind of numbers that that Facebook has, right? Even a consumer app, if you don't have that user count, you're not going to get the feedback as fast. You're not going to find problems and fix them as fast. So testing is really important. I think it's actually more important on mobile than it was on the web, because if you have a bug, it's going into the app store. Getting it fixed is a lengthier process, so it's out there for longer. And then it's your phone, right? So I think users really, first of all, users are really in control. They control the device. It's in their pocket all day long. They really care about having control of their experience on that device. And if it's not working, it feels really not that great to have something that's part of your phone not working. And I think users are pretty demanding. So I think from a quality perspective, it's really key. And I think that, you know, a lot of companies have only been not doing testing because the tool chains haven't been there. We're hearing from plenty of companies that, you know, they're trying to figure out how they're going to do testing. They're looking over the next 6 to 9 months at how they're going to be doing testing of mobile apps. And they're trying to figure out which tools to use.
So this is like a really emerging market, it seems like. Are you guys currently hiring?
Yes, we are. I believe it's sauclabs.com/careers has a list of positions we're hiring for. We'd absolutely love to hear from especially mobile developers who are interested in the problem of testing and want to help us make testing for mobile fantastic.
It seems like it'd be a great place to work. You guys are really supporting open source on your webpage. I was looking through your open source page on your website, and I'm seeing a big list of projects there. Now, did you guys actually like create those projects in-house, or are those projects that you contributed to, like external projects?
It's a little bit of both. Some of those are things that we created whole cloth, and others are things that we just got involved in and contributed to because we use them ourselves.
So the projects that you guys did create, are you accepting patches from outside, or is it just you keep it all in-house?
Absolutely accepting patches from outside. We love to see when, you know, external developers get involved in projects that we contribute to. We're big believers in open source, and we absolutely love to have involvement from anyone and everyone.
Mm. So it seems to me that obviously you're hosting this as a cloud service, so there must be a lot of servers involved, a lot of demand. So what did you have to do to make it so scalable? Did you have to really plan that out when you were writing the software? Did it all have to be thought about on a scalability kind of framework, if that makes sense?
It did, yeah. It's been a long road too. There's a lot of issues I could potentially talk about there. Building reliable, scalable cloud systems is its own little art, and we definitely learned a lot of lessons along the way. I have a little bit of background experience with scalability. Earlier in my career, I worked on peer-to-peer at BitTorrent, and before that with a company called FolderShare and a company called Audio Galaxy. So peer-to-peer, you know, organizing a bunch of computers out on the internet in kind of a, I don't know, a cloud of consumer devices is a similar problem, I guess, to, you know, building a cloud infrastructure. Actually, maybe a harder problem because you're dealing with people's PCs and you know, laptops and so on, rather than machines that you control in your data center that are all uniform and have good internet connections.
Mm. And you mentioned there that you, I noticed that on your biography there, that you used to work at BitTorrent, which must have been quite an interesting project to be involved in, I would imagine.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Really exciting, you know, just because, you know, BitTorrent is used by so many people and is such a force in the world and also such an interesting technology. It was a fascinating experience.
Yeah, yeah, and I was just wondering what people's reactions are like when they see that on your CV, I suppose. That's got some kind of coolness to it, hasn't it? Some geek cred, I would imagine.
I suppose so. I definitely do get, you know, among users of BitTorrent, people are always excited to hear about it.
Mm, excellent. We should talk a little bit more about, because you've been involved in lots of different projects personally as well in the open source space. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the things you've been involved in?
Sure. One that I'm very interested in is a Python evented IO framework called Monocle, which uses an interesting syntax for doing evented IO. So it's sort of evented IO, sort of like Node.js does. But we don't actually write that part of it. We use, under the hood, we use Twisted or Tornado, popular Python evented IO frameworks. And then we create a syntax using Python's generators. There's a keyword called yield. That lets you do evented I/O in a way that's a lot more like a traditional blocking syntax. We think it's a clever way to do it, and Sauce Labs uses Monocle pretty heavily in its backend systems. I'm really excited about that project. I think it's a fascinating way to do things. It's something that's really not possible in a Ruby or a JavaScript. Python has this generator syntax that gives you a really flexible and interesting way to deal with evented IO. So I think it's creative and interesting.
Mm. And I know you were you also created CodePad.org. So what is that?
Yeah. So before I got involved with Sauce Labs, I was interested in cloud computing. Like I said, my background was in peer to peer, and I kind of felt as I saw cloud computing starting to happen, I thought, hey, this is a related technical problem, and this is something that I want to get involved with. I think it's exciting. So I was working on a cloud computing startup. I had built a backend technology for sandboxing code based on virtualization, and CodePad was the first product idea I could possibly come up with based on that technology. It's a paste bin, so you know, a place to share code by pasting it into a form, and you get a permalink that you can pass on to other developers, and it does code highlighting. But the novel thing about it is it actually runs the code. So you paste in your C code, it runs a C compiler, it runs the code, and it shows you the output along with your code. And it supports not just C, but I think a dozen languages, Python, Ruby, PHP, C++, trying to remember what else, Haskell, OCaml, Perl. I think it's you know, it's kind of a self-supporting little project. It's, you know, free, and you know, I have some ads on it, and I think it's an exciting technology that just you know, it was my fun project before I met John and Jason and started Sauce Labs.
Yeah, I'm looking at the webpage right now, and there's a Vim plugin for it. That's awesome.
Vim and Emacs. So I don't take sides in this debate.
Randall will be pleased. Okay. So, I noticed that looking through your kind of history of different roles in different companies, a lot of the companies that you seem to have worked at have ended up getting bought up by big, like giant companies and stuff. So what's that like? It must be kind of strange to work on a project and be really into it and then have someone come and kind of buy it out and then not be in control of it anymore. It must be a strange process.
Yeah, it's, that's working in startups. A lot of these companies, got purchased after I moved on to the next company. So I'm really a startup guy. I really, my whole career, I've kind of jumped from startup to startup, and I intend to continue doing that. I think startups are just, there's an ability to be creative and to make an impact with a startup that I feel like at a larger company, there are advantages. You can get control of vast resources. And a lot of times you can work on products that, lots and lots of people are already using. So there's advantages on that side. But for me, startups are the thing. And hopping between startups my whole career, I think it's inevitable that, I guess if you're doing a good job, some of them ought to have some success.
Well, I was just going to say, if I'm running a startup and I really want to get bought by a big company, the first thing I should do is probably hire you, by the sound of it.
Yeah,
you've got a good record of that kind of thing. I know this is slightly off the topic of coding and technical side of things, but I have some friends who are involved in startups, and they're very keen on things like the lean philosophy and the whole kind of model of starting with a lean startup. Do you ever get into that side of things, or are you less about the business and more about the code?
Okay. I could talk for the whole hour about lean. I'm a big believer, and I really think there's some clever new thinking about how startups should work there. I think that that kind of thinking is just getting started. I think Eric Ries is absolutely right when he says that there is a science of startup management that we're just developing now. Startups are kind of, there's something has changed in the world, right? Computers have made startups a bigger economic force than they once were. You can now have a company that's doing something really new that can have a really big impact based on very low capital investment. And I think it needs a new kind of management. It needs a new kind of way of thinking about how do we organize our resources and our time. And I think lean startup is absolutely the beginning of that thinking.
Yeah, it seems to be very popular right now. I just mentioned it because I'm based in Liverpool, as people will probably know, in the UK. And we've actually got lean groups that meet up, much like kind of tech user groups, meet up once or twice a month to talk about startups and talk about lean and so on. So I'm afraid I'm not fully up on that yet, but I know it's very popular right now, the lean thing's kind of taken off. Okay, then. So we've talked a bit about the technology and stuff behind Sauce Labs and so on. You mentioned that it's a pay-per machine time kind of service. Is there any kind of trial or anything? If I wanted to just try it out, could I do that on a free account? Or is there any, do you have like a freemium model, or is it all just kind of...
Yeah, better than a trial, there's a free version. So the lowest level, the base number, I think it's, I think it's 200 minutes a month, is just free forever. So you can sign up, you can use it, you can run your Selenium and Appium tests, Selenium tests, and early next week your Appium tests through Sauce Labs for free if you just want to use it at low concurrency, low number of minutes per month. And if you find that you need more, we have subscription monthly subscription credit card plans where there's a base subscription cost, and then you kind of pay for overages. And above that, we do contracts. Some of our contracts are organized on a pay per minute. Some are organized on a pay per concurrency basis. We also do a free for open source version. So if you're an open source project, you can get, a little bit of a better plan than the regular free plan. You can get more minutes per month. The caveat is, you have to be open source. You have to make your test results public. So as you do testing on Sauce Labs, we're sort of video recording the browser walking through your app, if you're willing to make those assets public, then an open source project can get a better free plan.
Oh, that's interesting. So how do you actually record it then? Is it just screen capture? You just have some kind of screen capture?
Yeah, it's a VNC screen capture.
Right.
So throughout the test, we do screenshots at points where we feel like you've just run a command that's likely to change the page. So you'll get a list of screenshots. And then the whole time, we've got a VNC screen capture going.
Hmm. And what's the take-up like of the open source kind of version? You know what I mean? The kind of open source, the version for open source projects. I've got to say this right. I keep saying the open source version, but that's not right because that confuses people.
Right. So the sauce for open source, what we call it, open sauce. Open sauce is fairly popular. It's been used especially by some web frameworks. So Dojo uses it, and I believe it's either YUI or a sub project of YUI is using it, and a handful of other open source web frameworks, especially JavaScript frameworks, find it really useful for testing JavaScript on a bunch of different browsers. So a lot of those folks are doing JavaScript unit testing, where they'll use Selenium to launch the browser, and they point it at a page that has their JavaScript unit tests, and they get the results back from their JavaScript unit tests. It's a very common use case for open source.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds really, really cool. So I'm curious to know what, we've talked a bit about your kind of background. You've been involved in lots of projects. So what was it that made you want to get involved in open source software and free software particularly, more than, say, I don't know, going to work for a big monolithic kind of proprietary software company?
Oh, I guess open source is has been a part of sort of my interest in technology from very early on. I was installing Linux on a 386 with like 2 megabytes of RAM in 1994, 1995. So I just thought that, you know, when I saw, I guess it was Linux originally, that introduced me to the idea of open source. And as a young software developer, the ability to get my hands on source code for something like an operating system was just such an exciting thing. And then, you know, once I got involved and started working with and playing with open source software, I really felt like, especially for developer tools, I feel like open source is just a better way of doing things. For a developer, especially, you know, when you're locked out of the ability to fix something, I feel like that's just a liability that's, you know, painful and not really good for the world. For dev tools, you've got developers using these things all day long, and they're capable of fixing them. I think you just get better dev tools if you let them fix them, let them build the things they need. And so, from an early age, open source to me was sort of a no-brainer.
Mm. And obviously you'd expect us to say this on a show called Floss Weekly, but obviously we're here to kind of, to kind of extol the virtues of open source and free software. And one of the big things I run into is when people seem to misunderstand the difference between having an open source project and having a project with an API. And people say to me, oh, we've got an API. And I said, but that's not, it doesn't make your project open source. I don't know if you run into that at all. People seem to think having an API is as good as being open source.
Right. Well, it's better than not having an API, I guess, but it's definitely not the same thing as open source. And you lose that ability to, you know, if you're using the API and there's something that it doesn't do that you need, or something that it's supposed to do that's broken, you can't fix that. You can't build what you need. And I just think that's a tragedy to have, especially for dev tools, to have developers sitting there able to build what they need and not allowed to. Just seems like a waste.
Mm. Yeah, it's very true. It's very true. So, I mean, we've talked quite a lot about the different things that you're doing at Source Labs. Is there anything that you particularly wanted to talk about that we haven't mentioned or we haven't covered yet?
Well, the big deal for Source Labs right now is this Appium tool for automating native mobile apps. Is available open source today, but on next Tuesday, we're going to be making the cloud version of that generally available. So it's available on an invite-only basis today. You can go to sauclabs.com/appium and put in your email address. And we've been letting a lot of people in since we're going to be launching it soon. So you can get in line there if you want to try it early. And otherwise, it's going to be publicly available next Tuesday for, you know, for everyone to use. As you know, there's going to be the same deal as the Selenium product that we have today. There's going to be a free version, and there's also going to be paid plans if you need to use it more than that.
Okay, and you may have already answered this, but I'm curious to know what the future plans are for the product. So, I mean, what's on the roadmap coming up? Anything exciting that you want to tell us about?
Sure. Yes, absolutely. We are, you know, this initial version is going to run on simulators and emulators. It automates iOS and Android. It automates native apps and mobile web hybrid apps. So we think that's a good start, but we also know from talking to mobile developers that testing on physical devices is a big need. So we're definitely looking at that need and figuring out what we want to do there. So, you know, Appium already works on physical devices. If you just download the open source tool and you use your own devices, but we're absolutely looking at, you know, is there a cloud service here where, you know, testing on physical devices would be useful to people?
Hmm.
We had an announcement not too long ago. We're providing a Mac cloud for Travis CI, so that you can do Mac OS X and iOS builds on Travis, which we think is really exciting. And we're really excited to see, you know, if people are building iOS apps on Travis, you know, if there's a nice way where you can kind of build the app on Travis and then do your testing on Sauce Labs. Since we're providing that to Travis, we'd love to see if there's, you know, customers who want to use the two things together.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it could be a really cool prospect going forward. And I just thought of a question just popped into my head, which I don't even know, considering this show is called Floss Weekly. It's a strange question for me to ask, but I know obviously you support Android and you support iOS. I'm just wondering about other mobile platforms, because I know those are the two kind of the kings right now of mobile platforms. But I'm thinking about things like, I don't know, Microsoft are really pushing Windows Mobile. You've got Firefox OS, which, okay, is only just coming out right now. Other things. Is there any plans to maybe look at expanding into other open source, other mobile OSs or anything?
Yeah, more than just plans. One of the benefits we got out of, I guess, our rule number three, right, use a standard automation framework. By being Selenium compatible, it turned out to be pretty easy to automate Firefox OS because Firefox OS already exposes some of the APIs for controlling things with Selenium's WebDriver JSON Wire protocol. So actually at GTAC, the Google Test Automation Conference, Jonathan, who works with Sauce Labs, was sitting down with some of the Firefox OS folks and added Firefox OS support to Appium, I think, in a crazy night of hacking at GTAC. So Appium already has some basic support for Firefox OS. We've heard some people ask for a Windows Phone version have kind of looked into it. Should be possible, but you know, it's a matter of you know, enough folks being interested in putting in the work to make it happen.
Hmm.
So certainly, you know, as we talk to people, as we talk to people, Android and iOS right now are just the dominant platforms. That's what everyone is most interested in. So we'll see how Windows Phone and Firefox OS do, you know, as they start to gain adoption.
Am I safe to speak? Okay.
I think so.
Didn't mean to cut you off there, but we're getting close to the end of the show, and I need to ask you Randall's two favorite questions. So the first one is Vim or Emacs?
Emacs. I don't like taking sides, but personally, you know, my fingers know Emacs. I'm not gonna break that muscle memory and pick something else up at this point.
You disappoint me. But so the second question is, what's your favorite scripting language?
Favorite scripting language? That's a good question. For me, it is definitely a toss up. I'm a big fan of Python. I also think there's a lot to be said for Ruby. And I'm also very excited by JavaScript. So it's really hard for me to pick.
That was an incredibly diplomatic answer. I'm impressed.
My favorite programming language is every programming language. I think they're all interesting.
Yeah, I noticed earlier you said you don't like to take sides between Vim and Emacs, and then of course we ask you to take a side at the end. But that's, you know, that's the way it goes. Randall will be pleased. He's a big Emacs proponent. Okay, then. So, is there anything else that that we haven't covered that you'd like to tell us about, Stephen, before we wrap up?
Thinking about it, I guess no. The big news that I want to make people aware of is, you know, Sauce Labs launching Appium on the 14th, next Tuesday.
And where do people, if people want to get involved, you mentioned that you've got a very active community and so on. Where should they go to get involved, and what kind of people are you looking for?
Yeah, appium.io is the page for Appium. You can also check it out on GitHub, github.com/appium/appium. So the Appium user and the Appium repo. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for anyone who's interested in mobile automation. Whether you have experience with mobile app development or not, if you are interested in making mobile automation awesome, we would love to have your participation in Appium. We'd love to talk to you about it.
Brilliant. Okay, Stephen, thank you very much for coming on and joining us. And thank you very much for foregoing your usual trip to the coffee shop for us today and staying home in a nice, quiet environment. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so that was Stephen Hazel, is the VP of Product at Sauce Labs, and that was really interesting. He was telling us about testing and so on. And as I mentioned in the as we were going through there, I think I say this quite a lot, but I do think testing and documentation are two of the things that a lot of developers don't really enjoy doing or don't seem to enjoy doing. I know I'm less of a developer these days, but when I was a real hardcore developer, it was kind of the last thing on my mind. So I don't know, Randy, you're much more of a developer than I am. Do you think testing's important?
It is, and there's definitely not enough testing done, especially in the mobile market. I found so many bad things happening there with like random stuff I've downloaded onto my phone and played with that it's great to see more effort and time being spent in this area.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that Stephen was saying the difference between kind of web, the whole web testing side of it and the mobile testing side of it being that it seems almost more important on the mobile, because once you get your code into an app store or something, it's a lot harder to change it than it is to just change a file on a server somewhere and fix a website. So that was quite interesting. I thought that was a really interesting kind of model. So what have you looked at any of these tools? Do you think you might use any for automated testing and so on?
Probably not, because most of what I do is FreeBSD. So
okay.
We already have like our own testing system sort of in place. Yeah. But it does look really cool. It's something I would definitely recommend to some of my friends.
Excellent, excellent. All right, and so I'm going to do Randall's usual awkward segue into what's coming up next. Obviously, Randall will be back in coming weeks. We've got some interesting stuff coming up for you on the show. Next week, in fact, Wednesday the 15th of May, there isn't a show. We've got something else going on that day. But we will be back the following week, Wednesday the 22nd of May, with Mr. Jono Bacon, who... is the you may know as a former host of the show. If you've been listening to Floss Weekly for a while, Jono was a host up until about, I don't know, 3 years ago, something like that. He was a regular host with Randall, and he was on the show a lot. And he's going to come back, and he's going to be telling us about the Ubuntu Phone project. He is the Ubuntu community manager over at Canonical. And as you may have seen, if you're keeping up on the news, the Ubuntu news that's been coming out, they're working on a mobile phone OS. They're basically putting Ubuntu onto phones, which is interesting. So many things going on in the mobile space right now, so many different OSs. And then, as we just mentioned there with Stephen, there's the two that have got a real kind of head start already, iOS and Android. Can anyone really challenge them? I don't know. Ubuntu are going to try. So that'll be interesting. John is going to tell us about that. We've got Wednesday the 29th of May, so the following week. We've got Roberto Rosario Gonzalez, and I hope I said his name right. And he's going to tell us about Mayan EDMS, which is based on Django, apparently, Django Python web framework. And it's for scanning, automating scanning of documents and things. So OCR, grabbing text off, written pages, printed pages, and putting them onto your system and grabbing the text off them. Sounds really fascinating. So we're going to have a look at that and find out more about that. Randall will be back for that. And then obviously we'll have much more coming up in June as well. Okay, then. So if you want to find out anything about what I'm up to, you can head to danlynch.org, where you can find out all about all sorts of things, such as the Liverpool Linux User Group. If you're anybody's in this area, we're having a meeting tonight. It's probably a bit short notice right now. But if by some chance you're in the Merseyside area in the UK and you want to come and talk about Linux and other things with some geeky folks, you can do that. We're doing that tonight. We do it every first Wednesday, it's supposed to be, of every month. I know this isn't the first Wednesday. We've cheated a little bit. So head to danlynch.org. You can find out more about all the other stuff I'm up to. Randy, you're always incredibly busy doing lots of things. So what sort of things are you up to, and where can people find out more?
Truthfully, World of Warcraft.
Cool.
I'm getting back into FreeBSD. I had to hang up my commitment for a while and slowly easing my way back in. So I'm spending most of my time, I'll hold up, remembering how to code. It's been very fun.
Excellent. Okay. Very cool. So thank you very much for coming on and being co-host today. It's always a pleasure to speak to you.
It was
a lot of fun. And we'll be back next time with another Floss Weekly, or Randall will be back. So until then, stay free, stay open source, and stay Floss Weekly.